John Breaker One. This is Shark Pants Free Radio. Gamers, get your ears on because we're blowing the speakers out.
Grimdark Live. Weekly webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Warhammer worlds. Don't miss our live show on Thursdays, but for now, you've got us on sloppy seconds with our podcast with the Grimdark Gang. It's time once again for Grimdark Live.
Hey, welcome to Grimdark Live, your weekly webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Warhammer worlds. I'm your host, Patrick, and as always, my co-hosts, Steve and Randy. Fellas, what do you hear? What do you say?
We are going to be talking about the many faces of death tonight.
Yeah. We are going to be doing a little bit of a comparison to the Ossiarch Bone Reapers to the rest of the death factions, yeah?
Yeah. Let's take a look at them.
That is going to be a damn good topic. You want to know why? Because I think there's going to be a lot of eye-opening stuff. Because just in our offline conversation, Steve, we talked about doing this. I've really noticed that the conversation really takes on its own life. So that's going to be a good one, folks. You're in for a good one on that one. Randy, we got the nicest guy in tabletop gaming with us. Randy, what do you got for us, bud?
A couple bad reports hopefully coming up with some steam tanks are rolling and maybe some whole zombie dragon army.
you are doing it, man. You're coming out with the Free People's Panzer Division with those tanks, aren't you? How many tanks you planning on running? Can you disclose it right now, or do you want to keep that as your little hidden secret?
I'm keeping it as my little secret. It's not a whole army. Just maybe half.
And you know, and that right there is going to play into actually our question of the day. That's actually going to be coming up here later on the show, and like everything, folks, we got the question of the day and the closing thought towards the end of the show. But yeah, we got a lot of good stuff to talk about, and for myself, in the news, we're going to be talking about square bases. I know that you guys, Steve, Randy, you guys heard about that. The Warhammer community dropped that little ominous hint about the square bases and what could be in store for us in regarding to that. We're gonna talk a little bit about that. What I mean, you guys saw that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Slaves to Darkness. I mean, I got to tell you, we're going to kind of get into that in the news. There's been the idea that maybe this thing is going to be out, I believe, in December. Am I getting that right, guys? They're looking about a pre-order.
Yeah,
and a
they're coming
in December.
Soon. They're coming soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're coming.
Yeah, I tell you, man, that'd be a hell of a thing to find in your Christmas stocking as a Chaos God. That's going to be kind of crazy. But yeah, so
Well, I definitely think it's going to be a gift to Chaos players because the models in the army look to be fantastic. I hope they live up to, you know, the new models that they've created.
I hope so. I really do. And, you know, for a long time, you know, I always kind of laughed a little bit. And Randy, you were the only guy or one of the few guys I ever knew that ever actually played Archaon on the table. Oh, yeah. And it was always funny to me. You got the Lord of the Apocalypse, and he was just kind of a big dummy. You know, I mean, he could do some stuff, but I mean, he never really had the support around him. So I'm really excited. And I'm not even, like I said, I'm not a Slaves of Darkness player. I'm not one of those Jagoffs that calls it an STD army. That's I don't know why. That's just like broken glass in my ear when I hear some meathead use that. But anyway, moving on. But yeah, so that's what we got in today's show, man. We got that happening.
Hey, you Grimdark Goons, thank you all so much for listening to our Grimdark Live podcast. If you're new to the Grimdark Live experience or new to our podcast and like what you hear, please follow this podcast and pass us along to your friends. Let us know what you think about Grimdark Live in the show's comment sections, and let us know just how we're doing. Also, don't forget to catch us live on Thursdays. And if that ain't enough for you, check out our website at www.grimdarklive.com. That's grimdarklive.com. Anyway, thanks for listening, following, and just being awesome.
We're going to get rolling, and I'm sure that to a lot of people, you may have already heard this. We had this already on the boards, but Grimdark Live is migrating to a a fantasy show. For a long time, we were kind of a dual show. We're still going to keep the essence of what we wanted to do as far as talking about the community and some of the different aspects of the community and how to be. You know, the social contract is still going to be a relevant undertone here with Grimdark Live. It's something that we believe in and that we hold pretty dear. But guys, what do you think, man? We're taking on a new chapter here at Grimdark Live. We're going in the direction of full fantasy ahead.
Yeah, I think that is the course that our listeners wanted us to go.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But that's okay. You know, we're going to talk a little bit later about Gary's place on the show and how much he contributed to our show as our 40K man. But we're going to save that till later.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. If it's okay, we can cherry pick that. We can hit that later too. But I'd like to say something right now about Gary. You know, right off the top of the show, you know, Gary came onto the show as a guest over about a year and a half ago, and he was then eventually moved into a co-host spot and has been a huge part of Grimdark Live, and I think he brought a lot of the 40K knowledge that none of us had. I know I sure as hell didn't have it. And you know, it's kind of bittersweet right now. You know, we, after a lot of deliberation and talking and planning, this was kind of a path that I think in almost like a need to grow that Gary needed to head on. And you know, it's exciting. It really is exciting news for not only for us here at Grimdark Live, but for Gary and what he's going to do. His new show is going to be called Tabletop. I've already messed it up. Not Tabletop Warfare. Guys, help me out here. I'm botching everything that he wanted.
No, I think Gary wasn't certain yet what his name was going to be. I know he ran a couple names by us, but I think what really is important to note is that Gary is going to be doing now what he loves, and that's his passion, 40K.
Yeah.
I think that's the most important thing. And
Tabletop television, that's what it is. Yeah,
tabletop television.
Thank you. And Gary, I'm sorry about that. I was going off memory here, but sorry, Steve, I cut you off too.
No, it's fine. I just wanted to say that Gary is a class act.
And no doubt.
He is a guy that contributed so much to this show. And I think we would be remiss if we did not say that Gary... You know, whether he's on the show or not, will always be a Grimdark goon.
He's absolutely always a Grimdark goon. You know, for a little while he might be wearing a different shirt, but he's still always a Grimdark guy, always a Grimdark goon, and he's still going to be on the show. We're both going to we're going to be participating with his show, Tabletop Television, and of course that's going to be more of a 40K Magic Dungeons and Dragons kind of a focus. But you know you're going to get good stuff out of Gary. And, you know, like I said before, this is – and he's going to be back on our show. We wouldn't have it any other way, and it's exciting news. And it's kind of bittersweet because, you know, if you think about it, all parents eventually have to see their children grow up and move on. And it's a fact of life that we all can do is hope to that we did right by them and we raised them right and gave them the best start that we can. And to this end, I know that Randy and Steve and I and the whole crowd of Grimdark goons out there are sad and proud to see Gary move on and begin this new journey with his new show. But you know, this isn't goodbye. This is see you later. And Gary Frank is a dear friend to all of us. He's someone I admire very much, and I wish him all the best. And we will continue to support his new initiative. You'll be seeing it on our website, and we'll. We'll be like cousins, man. We'll be like that really weird family gathering. What do you think?
I don't know. I like my cousins. It sounds to me like you have a weird family.
But you know what, Gary? If you're listening out there, buddy, congratulations and all the best to you, man. And we will be talking to you soon, I'm sure. Let's move on real quick. Let's keep with the news. Our next topic here regarding the. I guess the news that broke today, I guess kind of as an ominous thing, is these square bases. So there was a lot of rumors, a lot of talking back and forth as far as what this could have meant. See, Warhammer Community came out with I guess a notification, and it was really very I don't know how to put it. You know, Randy, how would you put their little hint? I mean, they basically said everything comes round again, and even squares. And I had a picture of the old I don't know, what were they 25 millimeter square? No, that wouldn't be 25 millimeter. What were those old squares, Randy?
Well, it depends if you were high over a chaos. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 20s or 25 squares.
I mean, the rumors that are going around is that Forge World is going to be bringing back, you know, out of print Warhammer Fantasy Battle models with squares. I heard rumors that it's a chess set. I heard rumors that they were going to be getting almost like a rank and flank skirmish game. My thought is, and Steve and Randy, I'm going to shut up and let you guys tell me what you think, but what if this is also a market move by Games Workshop to knock out Kings of War out of the rank and flank competition? I mean, think about it. Kings of War just released their third edition 2 weeks ago. Now this from Games Workshop. I mean, I like it. You know, I often said that Warhammer Fantasy Battles 8th edition was almost a perfect game. You know, if you give it two house rules, it was a darn fine game. Not the same as Age of Sigmar. It's a separate game. It's chess and checkers to me. But as a separate game in itself, I happen to like it. So guys, let me softball this one to you guys. Either one of you go first. I mean, square bases, what say you? What do you think it is?
So I'll start off. One of the things to note is that the Forge World taking over, like just producing old fantasy. They already did that for the Hobbit game, or you know, Middle Earth or whatever. And another indicator is the actual 30K universe. It actually uses last edition 40K rules.
Okay.
For the Horse Heresy stuff. So like, you know, they do play the throwback game, and you know, you still actually use that core 40K rule book from last edition to actually play 30K. So I could see them going in that direction. But
you mean going the direction as far as bringing back Warhammer Fantasy Battles?
Fantasy Battles, but the main issue is that how many of us have actually been swapping out bases?
Oh, you know? I just got 300 knobblers on circle bases.
Yeah, but you got the other 2,000 still on squares.
Oh my God! You know what? I can't even think about that right now. I start getting twitches. But Steve, what do you think, man? What do you think GW is up to?
If you have an opportunity to crush another market, why not go for it? The way I look at it is, and I don't really think that's what GW is doing. We really don't know what any of this is, so this is just wild speculation. I cannot see GW bringing back Warhammer Fantasy Battles. I think if that's where people are going with this, I think they are dead wrong. Now,
okay.
I don't think, seeing that their profits have been what they've been for the past 2 years, I don't see how GW could look at that move and say, yeah, I think this is a smart move to go back to squares. And I don't think they have any intention of doing that.
You know,
I think what they might be doing,
okay,
is they might be putting out older, more popular units that, well, at least units that were popular back in the day, to serve possibly to serve Kings of War players. In other words, to steal some profits from them. Highly unlikely, though. I don't think GW even looks at Mantic as competition.
Well,
I really don't.
You know, here's what I do think. I think collectively, and you know what, I got to tell you, there's the sensible part of me agrees with you and Randy right off the bat. The sensible part of me agrees 1,000%, because honestly, I feel that the square base announcement is for several reasons. You know, first of them was obviously to generate hype and speculation about Warhammer Fantasy Battles coming back. It worked for me. You know, I was over here going, wow, that'd be kind of neat. But let's look at it from this perspective. Games Workshop, with the release of Age of Sigmar, was a complete disaster when it first came out.
Yeah, it
right
was a
or
flop.
Wrong. I mean, yeah, it was a complete disaster. But now it is literally gobbling up, I want to say, I guess the best way to put it is their own internal market basis of business from a product line standpoint that GW that Warhammer 40K used to hold. So no doubt about it, record profits, you know, they're balancing the scales internally at their home offices. So this is a thing, but you know, the Age of Sigmar is a real thing. But here's a thought. Now just let me spit this out. GW is well aware that Kings of War is doing well, hence their third edition. You know, Kings of War's market share has been booming. Manic wouldn't have released a third edition if there wasn't a want in the gaming community for Rank and Flank. GW is also aware of offshoots that are still around. Like, even though they're fragmented, Ninth Age is still there. Or how about Song of Fire and Ice? Or look at this new upstart called Conquest that has absolutely taken the gaming world by storm. This started out as a Kickstarter, and it's absolutely gaining a lot of steam. I mean, they see a market, and I believe they're going for it in some way. At least it would make it really interesting to see them go after what... Look, I think we all can admit there is a Rank and Flank market out there right now.
Yeah, they did the same thing with... like, the really big game a few years ago was Uncharted Seas. And, you know, that got a niche for the Warhammer, you know, naval battles or whatever. You know, even though they didn't have Man of War or whatever, they pushed out Dreadfleet just to, you know, take away some of that market share.
Yeah, that's true. That's right, Randy. I forgot about that. I mean, Steve, what, I mean, any other thoughts you have on?
I just don't think GW punches down. I just don't think they punch down. I think they are making so much money off of these gorgeous new models that they're producing that, to be quite honest, I don't think they give a damn about the Square market or the Kings of War market or any other company for that matter. I think that they have found a business model that is working, and they're just going to keep running with it and keep producing the best models in the industry. And I really don't think they even look at these other companies as competition. They don't, because they're making, because, and their profits indicate that.
Yeah, right. Right. You know, and that's, you know, I guess, and like I said, the person that wants to see like the big shakeup and the action and all that kind of stuff, that person in me, I would love to see this kind of like, I guess, a real tabletop war happen, you know. I think it would be hysterical, although that would be a hard sell because they destroyed the entire fantasy world. And in Age of Sigmar, they even reference it as the world that was. So I don't know what they would do other unless they would just say that, well, this is a different way to play Age of Sigmar.
Is Rank I don't know. Here's the way I look at it. I think when they first came out with AOS, the world was so god awful and so bad, and it was such a horrible, horrible idea that they had to call in every single game designer that they could muster to fix this mess that was AOS 1. And I think they did it. I think that, and that's the amazing thing. That's the comeback story of the decade.
You're not
they
kidding.
They were able to find these game designers that could come in and fix the god-awful mess that was handed to them.
Wasn't that a god-awful mess? I mean,
it wasn't even a serious world.
No.
You know, if there's one thing I can say about the fantasy world, and you used to laugh at me about this, you could ask me any question about the old world, about names, characters, places, and I can tell you that. This world, it'll take another 10 to 15 years before you're going to have lore masters able to tell you about this world, because it's so ever changing, it's so different, and it's so huge.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's funny. And that is a great point, Steve. You used to be able to rattle off anything about the old world like it was absolutely nothing.
Well, like it was Lord of the Rings, because I loved it as much as Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the funny thing is, I think people are reading, you know what, I don't know how to put this. I'm just going to say this as plainly as I can. Even though I want to see a shakeup in the market, even though I would love to see GW spearhead in and really, really see if they could. I mean, that would be an incredible story. I mean, those guys, not only are they coming in and now they're recapturing their former market space, but maybe people are reading this entirely wrong. I mean, this is simply going to be square bases finally going away out of all the, you know, boxes and models that are currently being supplied. You know, you know, like an older boxes like Phoenix Guard, you still have the square bases in them. So maybe that's just their ployful, playful way of saying, you know, the square bases are going to finally go the way of the dodo, and all the boxes and models being supplied now are going to be with rounds. Maybe that's their way of doing it. I don't know. You know,
well,
what
Steve,
I mean,
Steve did say a good point of, you know, like maybe like they could be like one of the things coming out is Warhammer Legends. When they announced it, it was, you know, we're going to take everything that had an old, you know, War Scroll and like update it or whatever. And they said they're going to do it across Warhammer and 40K. Like some of the like stuff would be considered legends, like the Night Haunt mortality glass, or the for 40K side, the Imperial guy with the one Imperial Marine.
The special
gun or whatever. And they said they were gonna, you know, give them points and stuff. So maybe they are starting. Maybe they'll sell them with rounds and squares inside, just so they can.
So
actually
you think
push
that there's
together.
Gonna be essentially two different War Scrolls? Like you think they're gonna go back to the
no.
Weapon
I think,
skill
I think,
and all
no,
that?
I think they're gonna reduce, you know, remake all the War Scrolls, whatever. But just so they can also sell it to the other crowds, you know,
the
just
Kings
to
of War.
Oh yeah,
Kings
sure.
Of War, you know,
yeah, sure.
To get some of their you know, models, you know.
And I'm gonna say this right now for myself, I'm not going backwards. Although I will say this, I love. Like once in a while, Randy, you and I have talked about it. Once in a while, yeah. I would love to get my models ranked up, you know, rank and flank game, and have a throwdown of 8th edition with those two house rules that we always talk about. But could I play that game again all the time like we did years ago? No, not at all.
No,
I love Age of Sigmar. So that's my question. Steve, I think I already know your answer. They come out with this new game. Would you play it?
No.
Okay. Randy?
I would probably play it, but
yeah,
not as my main game, but
yeah,
you know, one of my favorite things I used to do in college is my college game shop had dead game night where, you'd dust off the games that you played a bunch when you were younger, and, you know, you just have that. It's just, you know, one game a year for nostalgia or whatever, you know.
That's a great idea.
You know,
dead
that's
game night. I love that.
Yeah, it was fantastic. You know, people would bring out, you know, stuff that, you know, oh, I remember playing that, you know, 5 or 10 years ago. It kind of died off. You know, we all have models sitting in our closets or whatever. Let's pull it out.
Yeah, Rich used to do that at Piatone years ago, Randy. Remember that?
Yes. That's where, you know, that's where I did a lot of that.
That's pretty
cool.
I've never heard of that before, but that's actually pretty awesome. Yeah, I guess, you know, yeah. And Steve, you and I were just talking about this the other day. We were just talking about armies and our preferences of how over the years our preferences on armies have changed. And what did I say? I think one of the reasons that I'm not playing High Elves anymore, that was my main army, was I miss how beautiful they looked all ranked up.
Then you went to the ugliest thing in the game, with Noblars?
Noblars are the most beautiful thing. I know you guys don't understand this because you're feeble-minded, but I'm going to say this right now, that I have no idea why GW even bothered pressing any more plastic for any other models after they made the Nobbler. I bet you it was a Clinton murder conspiracy in there somewhere. I bet a guy who really wanted Nobblers, he could have changed the world. I think them and Epstein ended up right there, and it was all because they wanted to protect the world from Nobblers. I could be in mortal danger, and you guys don't even care.
Wow.
Randy, I think we need to up his medication again.
You know, this is one thing. I think everybody needs to, you know, have a Nobbler with them at all times. Where do you guys carry your Nobblers?
I want you to listen to the silence, Pat. That will be the best indicator of where we think this conversation is going.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. I couldn't hear you over the orchestra in my mind.
You know, the entire Ogre army I have doesn't have a single Noblar in it, other
that's
than the ones on the ones on the lookout. You know,
Randy,
that's just because it just accidentally came on the sprue. You know,
don't,
I
don't
know
don't
why.
Don't worry about it.
You
Randy.
Know,
that army can be thrown out in no time. You've got plenty of other models. Don't worry about it, Randy. I'm here to help you. I can talk to you about that. Noblar's greatest unit in the game. You'll see.
They didn't even get their own book. It's when terrible.
That whole book is about them. That whole book is about them dragging along these fat guys who think they can fight. That the whole book is about Nobblers. I don't know what book you're reading. All right, moving on. So that's it. So we'll have to see what the square bases are in store. But I think it's a playful way to kind of give us all.
I don't think it's anything significant.
Yeah. I think they're just going to come out and say that that. All the boxes are going to have rounds in them. If you want to ask me, it'll be something boring like that. And they'll snicker it off like that, I think. But moving on, we got Slaves to Darkness. Speaking of an actual army that's coming out that I'm pretty excited for, and Steve and Randy, I'm going to bounce a lot of stuff off you guys right now because I've been thinking about this army for about, honestly, about four straight days right now. And I just want to say, since we just jumped off the previous topic, I just want to say that my nobblers ain't scared. But here it is. Slaves of Darkness is on the horizon. There's going to be a new battle tome, units, and characters. And as it may seem like old news by now, you know, this, I think the whole thing broke on the 2nd of November, and you've all heard the thoughts and comments that are around the web already. I thought good old, you know, Grimdark Live here would give our perspective on this army, because I have a real hunch that these guys are going to be a well put together slash kick the ever loving crap out of you army. I mean, I think this undivided army
chaos
led by Arcan. Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I mean, you know, Grimdark Live can't always be the breaking news on armies like we were with the Oceark Bone Reapers, but I digress. Where we are is like the ads were saying on Warhammer Community, back in black. And, you know, I don't know if you guys have caught the release video or anything like that, but if you go to Warhammer Community, they've got a great video on this. And but as a side note, you know, stay tuned for that comparison topic here later in the show. When we break down and compare the Bone Reapers with the other death factions. We're going to be really deep diving into that. But now it's Slaves of Darkness. So up until now, we've had Everchosen with the Slaves of Darkness. And needless to say, I've been a little, unimpressed is the best way to put it with these armies, more than you know, when I'd hear folks refer to them as STD armies. I guess the only other thing that I was pretty unimpressed with. But Steve, let's start with you. What are your thoughts so far on the STDs?
I think Slaves and what to expect. I think it's going to be one of the biggest hits, one of the biggest surprise hits of this final leg of 2019.
Yeah. Right.
There are a lot of Chaos players that have been sitting out there in limbo for years, and they've had to deal with these crappy little supplements that have been guiding their army through this world. And I think that finally now for our Slaves to Darkness players, and they're out there, believe me, and they're out there in force. I've always said it, Chaos or Chicago is a Chaos town. You're going to see this army on every table, in every tournament, in every store.
I think you're right.
And it's going to be a very popular army. And from what I've been hearing, Chaos Knights are absolutely going to be just devastating.
Well, they got the van, they got the the Vanguard, the yeah.
They have regular Chaos Knights now again. The new poses are dynamic and beautiful. I mean, the army under the hands of an artist is going to be just magnificent to look at on the table.
Yeah. I honestly couldn't agree more. Randy, what are your thoughts on the STDs? What do you perceive them to be as they probably roll out here in sometime in December?
Yeah. So led by, you know, the big center model is going to be fantastic as an undivided army. They've always done that really well with the 40K end, and you know, like unmarked chaos. You know, it always seemed like you were, you know, for fantasy wise was like at a disadvantage because you would just get bonus rules for taking marks and stuff.
Yeah,
but the other thing is the you know, every single book they come out later now, they said that all the units inside the Slaves of Darkness book will have the ability to take a mark. So
correct.
Like
yeah.
right we're now, you know, the Slaanesh book is really well or whatever. So if there's something like a really good unit coming out of Slaves of Darkness or whatever, you know, a lot of people will just give it the mark of Slaanesh and be able to put it into that army.
But I wonder you know, if they're gonna do that via battalions, kind of like
battalion,
Beast,
like
Beast of Chaos. You know, you can take them as yeah. Nurgle, you can take them as whatever. So
because even at Michigan GT, my final opponent was a Slaanesh player,
okay,
with two Keeper of Secrets or whatever, but he had, you know, he had two units of 10 Chaos Knights with the mark of Slaanesh.
right
and then you just, like, you know, you don't see that, you know. I'm like, oh man, you know, I haven't seen a Chaos Knight in, you know, a couple
years. Totally
now
agree, Randy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
they were a dead army.
Yeah, they really were, and they were a dead army for 4 years. I mean, yes. they had the get started box for how long? And I mean, I saw it up there collecting dust on a lot of shelves. I never saw anybody walking out of store.
Well, that's the magnificent thing about this new starter box. It's got literally all of the new models. It's got the new Chaos Warriors, the new Knights, and that new Lord on the Lizard thing.
Yeah, I bet they're flying off the shelves now. I mean,
they're going to be.
And let's kind of peel the onion layer back here a little bit and take a little bit of a closer look in what we do know about Slaves of Darkness. You know, we all know that the ultimate aim for any warrior of the Slaves of Darkness is to ascend to demonhood and serve the Chaos Gods as an immortal demon prince. And I think this new army appears to be the new path, I guess, for the mightiest Chaos champions. And you know, looking at this new character that's riding this demon lizard thing. And I like how GW is setting up the storyline, as it appears that now the very greatest lords are all brought together and called to serve under Archaon in this big undivided pantheon. I mean, you know, Archaon being the supreme overlord of Chaos in the mortal realms, I think finally has gotten what he's deserved that he hasn't gotten since they released that model, a very cool model, by the way. What, Randy, how long did they release? I think 3 years ago now?
Yeah, that was edition. No, it wasn't End Times. It was literally...
That's right. It was at the end of 8th edition. It was at the end... Yeah, that's right. Archaon, the book. There was a special edition where you could buy it with the End Times Archaon book, that hardcover book.
Oh, interesting.
I forgot about that. Thanks for... And, you know, and here's as a side note. Oh, Randy, go ahead, buddy. I interrupted you.
No, they sold the old model with it. It was the first
the
ever chosen.
Goofy guy on the horse that everyone's using now for Chaos Lord.
Yeah, and then like when Age of Sigmar first rolled out, you know, that was the first after they had the books for like the whole book for Order, the whole book for Chaos and whatever. Everchosen was the first like battle tome, one of the first battle tomes.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Yeah. I got to try to get the baggage out of my head, you know, because you take Archaon, right? It is an immortal tyrant, the destroyer who brought the apocalypse to the world that was. I mean, we just mentioned it in End Times, and countless other realities since. I mean, this guy has brought worlds to their knees. Now I think that what's funny is they're kind of posing it, and I don't know why I'm catching on these words, but now they're kind of the advertisement saying now he's once again turned his gaze on the mortal realms. He never really had, in the way the army was comprised and put together, he never really had a good grip on it before, I guess. I mean, the storylines, you know, in a lot of the books, you know, Realm Gates and all that kind of stuff, he had a bigger part to play. But I'm glad to see that the army on the tabletop is going to be back, because I really missed Chaos Warriors. I mean, and honestly, because all you saw was Nurgle, Heed Knights of Slaanesh. You know, sometimes you saw a Tzeentch for a little while. Tzeentch was real popular for like, you know, a year. Beasts of Chaos, you know, but to see those armor clad warriors of chaos again, I'm just ecstatic about that.
Yeah, I did see one other person play Archaon in Michigan GT. He was actually playing Tzeentch, because what, you know, Tzeentch has the dice pool where you roll your fate dice or whatever, and you could choose, you know, before you roll, you could choose the fate dice to be that number. So Art,
right.
He has the Slayer of Kings. Like, if two of your dice to wounds are sixes, you slay the model outright. So he was going for sixes in his fate pool and is swapping them out and slaying one model. Like, yeah, he managed to like trigger the ability twice.
Yeah, well, that's the little things that Chaos can do. So let's keep the wheels rolling on this thing, because Steve, I want to pitch a ball to you on the Chaos thing here. In this new edition of Warhammer Age of Sigmar, obviously Archaon and his Chaos Hordes are still very much at the forefront of the narrative. That's kind of what I was trying to say before, and now with this release, I believe even more so. So Steve, I want to get your perspective on some of this, you know, now before we really kind of I guess get your thoughts on this, so we can kind of set the table. So I still think this could be a very hordish army, and I did say hordish. You know, if you take the forces of Slaves of Darkness, they're hugely varied, ranging from the barbarian tribals people who inhabit the chaotic fringes of the mortal realms to the legions of steel-clad soldiers or gigantic, terrifying war beasts, right? So the Everchosen, I believe GW has, corrected these guys. These guys are Arcan's personal army, the most elite cavalry in the game, a force made up of truly deadly individuals where every single model in your army is a match for, I guess, heroes of any other faction. So I think it'll be even more assured that most Slaves of Darkness units can obviously take the Mark of Chaos, like he was saying, representing their different dedication to the particular Chaos gods, what Randy was saying. But in practice, this means that your collection can be dedicated to any or all of the Chaos pantheons, and used alongside with Magakin of Nurgle, the Disciples of Zeech, the Hosts of Slaanesh, the Blades of Khorne, on and on and on. So here's my question to you, Steven. I know I kind of threw a lot out there, but I know that I needed to get all this out. And I know you're not a Chaos player at all, but I want to get your thoughts on all of that. What do you think, just real quick, what do you think we're going to see out there in your experience? What do you think we're going to see on the tabletop with this army?
I think it's very much going to be an elite army. I think the Chaos Warriors in conjunction with Varengard, in conjunction with Chaos Knights, is going to be all an undivided player needs to get the job done. And I think you're going to see Archaon a lot more on the table as well.
Yeah, yeah. Randy, do you agree with that?
Yes, and the fact that, like, for example, when the, like, I remember the first time Dave showed up to the club or whatever, he had all those marauders, and we're just like, you know.
A hordish army, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, it's something different to see, too. So, you know, yeah. I don't, like, depending on how cheap the marauders are, you know, you could go both ways or whatever. But,
well,
yeah, you know.
You know, that's so. One of the things that we talked about when we were when we've been looking at some of the recent tournaments and stuff. I don't want to see just endless meta chaser armies when I go gaming. I want to be able to see Slaves to Darkness. I want to see Seraphon. I want to see Karadrin Overlords. I want to see a wide variety of armies like we used to back in 8th edition. And now that they're kind of evening up things with these newer books, you're probably going to see more people trying to get in to the game with your Slaves of Darkness.
That is so exciting.
Yeah. I just think it's something that needs to happen. You know, for a long time, death has been, has been the new bad boy on the block, you know, and most of the storyline has been, driven by death. And I think Archaon, this is his re-entry back into the scene. This is him saying, no, I'm the big daddy on the block, not Nagash. And I think that there's going to be an inevitable clash because
yeah.
Chaos is not going to play second fiddle to death.
Well,
that's
no,
and not going to happen.
And I think Nagash has always been kind of a you know a thorn in Chaos's ass, because if you think about it this way, think about Archaon especially. He has gods above him. You know, he has gods above him. He's got, you know,
yes.
all four of the Chaos gods, five if you consider the rat. But you know, Nagash, he's the CEO, man. He's the chairman of the board. It's him.
Yeah.
So I think there's a huge, you know, advantage or motivation for Archaon to try to take him down. But here's my last question. Go ahead.
After the Age of Chaos, Nagash basically took advantage of the vacuum of Chaos, and hence we have Soul Wars. Now we're going to see Chaos reasserting itself and returning to their, at least what they believe to be, their rightful place as the supreme gangsters of the Warhammer world.
I hope so. So I'm going to throw this out to you know, Randy, I'm going to throw this out to you first. What do you think attracts players to a Slaves of Darkness army? And Steve, I want to throw, and again, I don't want to hedge too much on our question of the day, but what do you think attracts players to the Slaves of Darkness?
So I know a lot of people originally got into Slaves of Darkness because it was such a low model count army. The used to just be able to buy, you know, a couple boxes of knights or a couple boxes of Chaos Warriors, and you know, 20, you know, two boxes of 12 had 24 dudes, and you know, it was a good like 600 point chunk of your army, you know,
sure,
to deploy on the field or whatever.
Right.
And you know, back in that day, you know, I remember, you know, at least in my like NIU club and whatever, it was like 3-1. Basically, you know, it was the the Space Marines of 40K where there was just so many, just, you know, oh, people were like, oh, I can get into the game, just, you know, a couple boxes and a couple characters, and, you know, it was just a low elite model count army, which is always for as an entrance fee, you know, to this expensive game we play.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I mean, it does kind of alleviate that barrier of entry. I mean, Steve, let me throw another question at you. I mean, you've got so much experience in this hobby. You've got so much success in this hobby. And I'm not saying this because we're friends. I'm not saying this because you're bigger than I am and you'll beat the hell out of me if I say something wrong. But what I'm saying here is, what advice would you give to a new Slaves of Darkness player or someone, you know, that's actually going to be going in to fight this army from what we think we know about it now? I mean, considering Chaos Warriors are still pretty tanky already.
First thing I would do is look out, seek out Chaos players that are already established in the hobby and get advice from them. The person who plays the army will always help you build the most passionate army. And by passionate, I mean passionate with love for that army. If you want to, for instance, if you want to play Gloomspite Gitch, you want to talk to a Gloomspite Gitch player because they're going to love their army. Same thing applies to any army. You know, talk to people who are already playing that army. And if you are going to play Slaves to Darkness, which I think is phenomenal, Chaos is just not my cup of tea, never has been, never will be. But I think they are going to be a beautiful army on the table, and that you will be able to probably get a nice 2K army for about $600-700, which is a fairly good entry fee for Age of Sigmar nowadays. So I think, go for it. Play them.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I love that. And I love that advice. So before we get rolling to our main topic, which we're going to be talking about the Ossiarch Bone Reapers and how they compare in size up to the rest of the death factions. Randy, you, out of everyone right now that's currently on the show, myself and Steve and you, are the only real Chaos Slaves of Darkness guy here. So I'm going to ask you this. What do you think has been corrected for this army, or what would you like to see corrected that you're hoping is in this new edition of Slaves of Darkness that might actually be threatening on the table?
The things that I would like to see fixed,
actually getting a book, maybe.
Yeah, actually getting a book, and you know, not like the I said, like. You know, I bought the Ever Chosen list just because I just enjoy playing, you know, various different things or whatever. Like, their battalions are literally play 7 units of Nurgle or whatever, and each you get this bonus if there's exactly 7 guys in the unit. And like, you know, you buy units with units of 10. Like,
yeah,
it's just like you're literally paying for 10 guys and not, you know, putting only 7 on the table just to get that, you know, I have my cast god number just for, you know. I'm paying pay for 20 guys, only put 14 down, and, you know, just for my 5+ extra save for Nurgle. And then it's like, you know, 7 units of 7 don't fit on the table with you know, the big guy. So
yeah,
it's just
yeah.
You know, I would like to see some of the actual like Ever Chosen battalions, you know, changed up a lot. So that's one of the things I would like to change. The things
I like
about them is the. Like I like the fact that like the Ever Chosen have the ability to ignore a spell's effect on a 5+. Like,
gotcha.
that's fantastic. And like I do like the fact that just the their shields also give them a 5+ against mortals, but they, you know, they still they can still take normal wounds, but then they still have their heavy armor, so kinda balances out.
Right.
Like, you know, I know that the trend is to have like very low armor and have to buff it up, and then, you know, have a good, you know, against mortal and normal wound, you know, after save. But, you know, having one or the other, you know, high armor and that, like, just starting off the bat, you know, not having to, you know, use command points to, you know, do stuff is nice too.
And we'll see what they come out with. I mean, I think this army is going to just kick the doors in. I really think Games Workshop is planning on taking Slaves of Darkness out a whole new door. And I think that what it's also going to do to draw in units that are already relevant in the other Chaos factions. Like I said, I mean, could you imagine a undivided, you know, Chaos army that wants to take, you know, some you know, Skaven, you know, some Pestilence, or they want to take some Hedonite Slaanesh or some Nurgle Demons, you know, they would have some pretty awesome accompaniments there. So I think that I think this army is going to be a lot to deal with on the table, and I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be nice. And like Steve said, it offers up more of that variety that we all crave. You know, I know what you mean, Steve. You walk into that tournament and, you know, there's 60 people there and 43 of them are all playing Death.
Yeah. Or playing Slaanesh.
Yeah. Now. Yeah. They're all playing Slaanesh. You know, they're walking around with, the big dummy. Hey gang, I wanted to take a break in today's show to introduce one of our sponsors and a great store for all of your hobby needs. That's GameStorm Gaming in Lamont, Illinois. Open 7 days a week, 12 to 12.
GameStorm Gaming has got you covered for all of your hobby and gaming needs. They got Magic the Gathering, War Machine, X-Wing, Game of Thrones, Force of Will card game, PC gaming and repair, Warhammer 40K, and Age of Sigmar, and a ton more. Grab paints, brushes, cases, dice, and a lot more at GameStorm Gaming in Lamont, Illinois.
Stop in and see John and the gang there at GameStorm Gaming, located at 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois, or check them out on their website at GameStormGaming.com. Again, that's www.GameStormGaming.com.
They also stay open past midnight for special cases and events, so get over there and get your nerd on with GameStorm Gaming. 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois, 630-243-9330. Again, that's GameStorm Gaming, 1243 State Street, Lamont, Illinois.
GameStorm Gaming is a proud sponsor of Grimdark Live. We hope to see you there. But at any rate, let's keep rolling. We are heading into our main topic, which is the OCR Bone Reapers as compared to other Death armies. So Steve, I'm gonna pitch the ball to you, man. Let's get into this, man. Let's really dive into this and see what we can make of this as far as how do they size up against their other buddies in the Death world.
Well, I think what's important to understand is what does each army have to offer a Death player. So when you look at, for instance, when you're looking at Nighthawn, and Randy, I'm sure you could, you know, expound upon this. You're looking at an army that is more defense-based because of the Ethereal rule. So they're going to be harder to kill, harder to rend, but they're still one-wound models. So when you look at Nighthaunt, you think mostly defense. When you look at Legions of Nagash, you're looking at lots of magic, especially from the big Bone Daddy himself. You're looking at lots of Grave Guard that can basically get into a grind and be brought back. So that's your army that can get into the long fight and survive, supported by magic. But when you look at these Bone Reapers, this is finally what I think Death players, more aggressive Death players, are looking for. This is going to be your elite fighting army supplemented by shooting. And that's going to be one hell of a combo on the battlefield. They're not going to be a big army, but they're going to pack a powerful punch.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you. You know, this for sure, this ain't your granny's Death army. And I thought this was a very good topic, as they're quite different from their Death cousins. And even their army setup and rules are quite separate and apart. You know, different even from other AOS armies, Death or not, that are, you know, other current
as they
army
should
builds.
Be. Yeah. As they should be.
Now, Steve, you know, and Randy, I'm not, taking something away from you. I mean, I want to hear your perspective because you are literally a Nighthaunt player and a damn good one. So I guess I'll throw this out to both of you. I mean, in Death currently, we have, apart from Bone Reapers, we have Nighthaunt, Legions of Nagash, and Flesh Eater Courts. So What jumped out at you? I guess, Steve, I'll go with you first. What jumped out at you, Steve, differences that they have versus their other Death Army cousins?
They're clearly an ode to the Tomb King.
the low-hanging fruit. You got to go for that one. Yeah,
I mean, everyone realizes that. I mean, I think it would be absurd to even try to argue against that. But what they offer is a combination of high defense, high offense, and their damage output is just ridiculous.
Yes,
the Necropolis Stalkers, or the Immortus Guard, the Elite Guard. There's groups of those big guys that can have a 2-up armor save.
Yeah, here's what's disgusting about that. On the page, and I've got my book in front of me, my OCR Clone Reapers book. I buy every book, I read them, but the Necropolis Stalkers just already have a 4+ save. Now,
exactly.
Now that's already pretty damn good.
Yes, it is for a big guy.
Sure. So already, you know, a 4+ save. Randy, I know you're chomping at the bit, man. What do you, you know, you're the Night Hunt guy. What do you think?
Yeah, so I did pick up the box set, so I will be starting them. But I said the main difference is, like I said, Nighthaunt is defensive. You know, I did struggle a little bit with them at the beginning, and then when they announced that the Legion of Grief is getting the grave, you know, rules or whatever, I did one trial game, but just adding the ability to bring one unit back from the grave or whatever, and like just by spending the command point, you know it literally bringing back a 320 point unit and being able to use it again,
basically
like pushed me from, you know, favorably losing games to, you know, like actually having a chance just by giving them that one rule, you know.
Sure,
and then you know, it just, you know, the Nighthaunt needed something or whatever. And then, you know, I didn't jump on the Nagash bandwagon for legions or
and
whatever.
And that's why you are a wonderful human being.
The entire year that book was out or whatever, my Nagash just sat there on a square base and I didn't rebase him at all.
Well,
it was only for the siege that I decided to play him in a big narrative game where, you know, in a big game he would probably be, you know, at a turning point, you know. As, you know, so, and His casting is unbelievably bad for myself, you know. Not being able to, with +4 to cast, not being able to get a 5 on 2 dice, you know.
That's pretty bad, Randy.
That was pretty
good, yeah. So,
and, you know, I guess just in comparison, and again, for everyone just jumping with us, what we're doing is we're talking about the new Death Army, the Osiark Bone Reapers, and we're comparing them to other Death Armies in the Death faction. So, in other words, what we're doing is we're looking at the Osiark Bone Reapers in one hand, and then we're looking at the Legions of Nagash, we're looking at the
Flesh Eaters,
the Flesh Eater Courts, and then we're also looking at the Soul Blight just popped in my mind. I know that's
well,
Soul those Blight. Vampires. What are those?
I know that's what you're waiting for, Steve.
Oh, believe me, like nobody's business.
But
I think that when they do come out, that's going to round out death.
Yeah.
And I think that, and I think it's appropriate that they're coming last.
Yeah, and I want to jump in with this thing. First thing that jumped out at me when we started talking about the differences between these armies. OCR Bone Reapers, no allies. Nope, none.
They don't need them.
Nighthaunt hates your guts. Legion of Nagash hate your attitude. And even the Flesh Eater Courts is crazy. They're not. They don't even want to be your friend. They're not even crazy enough to do that. I mean, really though, this isn't the end of the world. I think, like you were about to say, Steve, that the OCR Bone Reapers are still strong enough to handle. Just by looking through their book here, most stuff on their own.
Oh,
the biggest downside I would say here is that you can't really compensate for your weaknesses like some other armies can with allies. The biggest upside is that you no longer have to worry that an ally detachment, I guess, is going to be more effective than something in your own book. So it kind of weighs out one way or the next. I mean, but yeah, no allies. That's one I would say.
They're very much going to appeal to the elitist gamer, the gamer who tends to play the small elite professional armies. I think that you're going to see Bone Reapers develop into that kind of category for Warhammer.
That's
gamers.
Interesting. That's an interesting point. You think so, huh?
Yeah, I really do. I don't think that a lot of people are interested in them just as like a casual death army. Like, I think that it's going to appeal to a certain type of death player who is looking for a small, powerful, kind of compact elite army. And that's what I see them becoming. Because if you look at them, they're very much an army based on martial prowess. You have to have certain battle line. They do not have battle line if. So you're going to need your ranked up troops. It's an army. It's a professional army, the way I see them. This is what Nagash would use as his enforcers. These right. are the guys that can get into the long fight.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the way you put that, man. I'm not even going to try to comment over it. I mean, that was a perfect way to put it. But here's the thing, guys. What do you guys think about no command point structure? I mean, they got these things called relentless discipline points. I'm just flipping through the book right now.
Because it's what makes them unique. They're their own version of death. Every death army, if you think about it logically, even if you were a death player, okay, and I consider myself a death player. I'm just waiting for the real death army. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that out loud?
He's referring to vampires,
every death
folks.
Army is the same. They use the same kind of structure, the same kind of gaming mechanic, you know, virtually. And then you get this army, which is completely different than all the other death armies. It works differently. It fights differently. It has different gaming mechanics as you progress through the game. This is the army that the elitist death player has been waiting for.
Randy, what say you on this?
And also to note that they don't join other armies. Like no. you can't bring them outside. And to note that they don't have just a straight battle line unit. So you can't basically I want to play Legions, you know, just death keyword and bring in, you know, their battle line, you know, it's all, you know, very specifically their army and their play style.
Yeah, they're more,
you know,
guard.
Like one of the things that to note about like all the other death armies is how many times have you seen, even though their battle line, if for Nighthaunt, how many times you see Reapers in all the other lists as a unit of 30?
Exactly.
Because that's their only way of dealing, you know, a decent amount of wounds and
right.
stuff.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
And I think to kind of tie up that point there, I mean, with this relentless discipline points, you know, they do dodge the command point punishment, I guess the best way to put it. You know, if you have a command point thirsty army, being a Beast Claw Raiders player for many years, for about a year and a half, I know what that's like. But because they're so expensive, I guess it'll be hard to fit much in. But try to use these guys to squeeze in some cheap screen or synergies into your army. And I think with that coupled with relentless discipline points, what I'm reading here is something that also sets them apart. But like you were saying, Randy, I'm looking at here, no mercenary companies whatsoever. I mean, it's worth noting that if you ever include Archon or Nagash, in your list, you're locked out of mercenaries, which makes them different from every army currently right now in Age of Sigmar. No mercenaries in that regard.
Yeah, they don't need them. Right. They wouldn't suffer them.
Yeah, you know
they
what?
Are still arrogant, and they consider themselves to be the be-all, end-all
right.
of Nagash's fighting forces. They don't need or want allies.
Yeah, what do you guys think of the Deathless Minion change? I mean, this is different in here. Now from what I'm gathering, and you know, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but Deathless Minion is another one that's different. It says, basically, they don't rely on heroes for the 6+ Deathless saves, as you know, as nearly every elite unit, I guess, and battle line unit champion have the Hecatos rule. That's what I'm reading right here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so even Deathless Minion is different from their
they're relying
their three
on their
other
unit
cousins.
Officers. They're commanders of their own units.
Right. Right, which
that's
also
the difference.
Which also feeds into no battle shock. They have this thing called ranks unbroken by descent. And basically what this is do not take battle shock tests for friendly Ossiarch Bone Reaper units. I mean, yes, you folks, you heard that right. Immunity to battle shock their entire army. Their enemy, really, their only options are killing, fleeing, or being killed. I mean, think about that. In addition, the Osiark Bone Reapers, like stated already, they don't generate command points. Instead, you generate relentless discipline points at the start of each. Is it battle round, Randy or Steve? I think it's battle round. It's battle round, yeah. But you lose them when you generate your next batch. So they should be all spent before that happens, if you get what I'm saying. It's kind of like, you know, your vacation time at your company. If you don't use it, you lose it. So in a way, this is also different from other Death Armies in the way that they bring units back, I guess, correct? I mean, so guys, pour it on me, man. So far, what do you guys think? Give me some thoughts.
The whole point of them not having battle shock or not suffering battle shock even makes them more, that's what makes them such an elite army.
Right.
That they don't have to worry about that. So they can get away with having less troops and more elite troops and not have to worry about suffering what other armies suffer.
Right.
For battle shock.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're going to be a hell of an army to fight on the battlefield.
Well, I'm just gonna do a quick run through. Actually, Randy, before I start slabbering on, what are your thoughts on that, man? I mean, let's hear it.
Yeah, I've read. My only knowledge is the starter box. Units. I have not read through the book as of yet. You know, I've been focusing on the orcs and free people with a lot of my spare time. So. I'm not that, you know.
Just to kind of go through this, the Immortus Guard, 3+ save, but on a 2+, they basically have a ward save if they're within 3 inches of any other friendly heroes or units.
Yep.
The Death Riders, 4+ save. Also, it looks like not a ward save, but they have a no, they don't. So, I mean, I'm looking at this whole army here. This whole army, even their battle line is elite. 4+ save. So their characters, ironically enough, Vok Mortnian, I guess if I said that right, and the Soul Mason, they're both 5+, but everyone else in this army is 2s, 3s, and 4s for the most part.
Which fits their theme.
And, you know, speaking of which, I'm just kind of looking at something here, and Randy, I know that we kind of talked about this offline, so prepare to correct me if I'm still a little screwed up. But both Nagash and Archon are different from other death rolls now, in their other capacity of other death rolls now, that all, you know, because I guess now they know all of the spell lores from this book when in a Bone Reaper's army, but Nagash no longer simply knows every death wizard spell on the field.
Yes, they did update his war scroll. The actual old one is...
Now, is that globally?
Yeah, so even Legion of the Gosh used the new Nagash rules.
Yeah.
Because they replaced... Even in the app, like there's no two Nagash.
So Steve, did Nagash just get a buff? Look, what am I hearing here?
No, as a matter of fact, a lot of people are complaining that because he can't know all the death spells anymore, that's not hurt him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah. They gave him the ability to cast the Arcane Bolt and Mystic Shield as many times as he wants, though. But he doesn't know all the death spells.
Yeah.
All the ones on the table, you know. So.
I guess now both Nagash and Archon's healing ability now heal Osiark Bone Reaper abilities in addition to summonable units, and they heal a flat 3 wounds instead of just D3 now. So.
Yes.
Okay. It looks also like Archon's Curse of Years has been changed. Now ones are always failures. Huh. Yeah. So you can no longer hope for one die to pick up enough, you know, steam to deal infinite mortal wounds. So that's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what everyone was crying about with him.
Yeah, remove a unit off the table. It was kind of dumb.
Do you think you're going to see a lot less Archon on the table now?
He still is good. He's, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, he's still good.
Yeah,
I'm looking at it.
Did they change his points? Because, I always thought 320 was kind of under.
I'll tell you right now. In this book here, Archon.
Because I used to, you know, I play Naferata in my list all the time. And, you know, I'm like, why is she 400 points and he's only, 320, you know?
That's funny. So let me start to see here what his points. I guess Archon's command ability has been changed, so it can only be used once per model. So no more 27-inch, 30-inch, whatever it was, Hand of Dust. Looks like that's been done. So You wanted to know what Archon the Black's points are?
Yes.
360 in the Oceanic Bone Reapers book.
Okay. So he did go up in points.
Yeah.
Yeah. It used to be 320. 40. So 320 to 40 points.
Yeah.
360 is fair.
You think so?
I think that's fair.
I think it's a fair price.
Yeah. Yeah. I always wondered what the algorithm is or what the mathematical equation is of how they point out models.
Want to sell it more or lower the price?
Mechanic, no. Yeah, exactly.
Remember those days? You know, the other thing, after looking at this, guys, and I'm kind of curious, you know, I think we just missed the elephant in the room, no pun intended, on the differences here, but model count. You know, most death armies lean more towards numbers. I mean, I guess, Steve, you know, I guess you did kind of touch on that.
Exactly what we said. They're going to have less models. And I mean, they're going to be elite.
Yeah,
it's not going to be all skeletons or, you know, beast, you know, ogre-sized models. There's not going to be in between.
It's going to be stalkers or Mortex, Yeah.
I mean, most death armies lean more towards numbers and you know, on the horde elite spectrum with, you know, all their cheap bodies and high bravery. And, you know, you tend to play Legions and Nagash or Flesh Eater Courts by using overwhelming numbers. While I guess, you know, Legions and Nagash does have some expensive and powerful characters at its disposal, not least among them, you know, Nagash himself, that prick. I guess you still tend to put a lot of work with that maxed out squads of skeletons or chain rasped hordes or stuff like that. But Oceanic Bone Reapers fall very much on the opposite side of the spectrum is what I guess what I'm seeing here in the book and listening to you, Steve, you're absolutely right.
Which they're going to be back to turn. Fantastic. They're elite.
They're going to have a lot of trouble against high rend armies. But they're going to do spectacular against armies that have like maybe rend of one or no rend at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're going to mop them up. They're going to mop them up off the table.
Would you guys agree that this is kind of one of those armies where it'd be safe to say that every unit is a hero, basically?
Well, they have the potential to be a very powerful and nasty army if played well.
Yeah.
I think they're going to, I think you're going to see them all over the tables. I think they're going to disappear in a heartbeat the minute the vampires come out. But
okay, Steve, I need to piggyback off that statement. I want to hear your thoughts on this one, man. You ready?
Go.
Why the heck does it appear that this army isn't selling? It's not popular.
Well, I can tell you this, and I don't want to slam anybody's store, so I'm just going to not use names.
I went into a certain store
on the release day. I went into a certain store on the release day, and every single one of the boxes were on the shelf. I heard from a friend that in the store that he goes to, they also were sitting on the shelf collecting dust. And that surprised me. Because I really did think this was going to be a huge hit for death. I hope it is. I really do. But I'm not seeing it. Now, granted, I was there on release day from probably 10 o'clock till about 1:30. And I did not see one person even look at them. And the shelves were completely full. So I don't know what that means, but I can say this. Chicago has always been a chaos town. Always. It's just always been a town dominated by chaos players. So maybe the stores that, you know, just from our own, you know, personal experiences, maybe the stores that we go to normally are just not death player stores. That is possible. I don't know how they're selling up north, how they're selling in other parts of the country, but I can tell you that two stores that had full stock of them on Saturday with all the new models, all the new terrain, all the new stuff, they had not sold one box.
Yeah.
And there was no one. And here's the most important part. There was no one there at 10 o'clock waiting to pick up those models. If an army is going to be hot, it'll be off the shelf in a day. That's usually what happens.
Do you think releasing them with the Ogre Maw tribes hurt them?
Yes. I think that what ended up happening was people saw the Bone Reapers and said, okay, this is just Tomb Kings 2.0. And if you weren't interested in Tomb Kings before, you're not going to be interested in them now. And people looked at the devastating new rules for like the Iron Guts and for the Ogres, which is a damn good army. And yeah, I
Destruction
think people,
got a lot of love.
Oh yeah. I think people looked at the Ogres and said, what I can do with 12 Iron Guts will eclipse. Yeah. Will eclipse anything that I could do with Bone Reapers.
Yeah, I think
that's
my
two cents on it.
I mean, Randy, what are your thoughts? I mean, look, you're very well steeped in the community and the trends and in the meta. I mean, heck, you're Games Workshop light out there in Indiana. So what why is this army not? I mean, look, we look, in all fairness, in our gaming group, the Grimdark Goons, we have two guys, both of them awesome players. That are migrating towards this army, the Bone Reapers. Now, one is kind of vacating his Daughters of Cain for now. And the other guy, I think, besides playing Dwarves, he was always kind of a death guy. So those guys seem to be taking the first stab at them in what I perceive to be a very powerful army. But, I mean, Randy, I'm going to ask you this. In your perception, in your thought, in your belief, whatever it is, why does this army kind of seem to be stumbling out of the gate?
Yeah, with the release of the rules, I think maybe the command structure kind of maybe, you know, even though it seems really good, it's going to take a lot of practice to figure out, like, you know, what points to use and when and stuff like that. So it's I think, you know, like the upkeep and using, you know, proper, you know, things in order will be maybe a little bit of a deterrent, but like, you know, the classic undead player also does, you know, they look too new and fancy, not old enough, you know. You know, Nighthaunt looked like a bunch of ghosts that could have been, you know.
I do love those sculpts.
Yeah, they do, you know, match the old ghosts or whatever, and you know. It could be like seen in both, whatever. These are just like, I've heard a person refer to them as more of a golem army than a like an undead army.
Yeah, know? Or you
they're
or you're
constructs
to,
or yeah. Yeah, or
you're,
you know,
you're referred to, yeah, as in 40K, you know, to the
Necrons.
Necrons, yeah. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
One of the things that people used to love about death armies in the past is that you could literally create a monster mash. You could have units of wraiths. You could have, which are now like your Grim Wraith Reapers, you know.
Yeah.
You could have units of wraiths. You could have mummies. You could have, and I'm going back to like 5th edition. Yep. But you could have a wide variety of undead troop types. And with these newer armies, you're kind of restricted. I think that people are really are waiting for that ode to the old death armies where you could take a wide variety of troops. And I'm praying that that's what the vampires are going to be.
I hope they get a unit like werewolves.
I don't know. I mean, it would be great if they did, but I'm hoping that the vampires are kind of a throwback to the Karstein kind of vampire armies that I used to play like in 6th edition.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I hope so
I really
too.
Do.
Now, I think that would snap people out of the kind of the doldrum that they're in right now as far as how they view this Ossiarch Bone Reapers army. But I got to tell you, I read the book. I'm reading it now. And just, you know, as a side note, I buy every book, every Age of Sigmar battle tome that comes out. And I read them twice. You know, first I read just the allegiance abilities all through the War Scrolls and everything. And then from there, I'll read it again, but I'll start with the lore and read it cover to cover. It's just something I've always done. It helps me understand the army if I come across it on the tabletop, you know. And this is an extremely powerful, very strong new force. And, you know, like many new Age of Sigmar armies and units, the selection is pretty limited, and it's unlikely that there will be too much support beyond this initial wave for the immediate future. But the limited model selection, I guess, it does offer a certain underlying complexity to the army. And to be frank, it plays to me, if I, in my head, you know, just kind of, you know, doing some scratch in the dirt kind of plans here. I think it would play unlike any other army before it. I mean, it turns the command point system completely on its head, turning every unit into a hero, with which opens up a very wide variety of tactical options. The relics, the artifacts, and the spells are generally very powerful across the board, you know, further supplementing these forces, I guess, if you want to put it that way. But properly supported, it's going to be a very hard army to play and on the tabletop. And I would even say, looking at this book now, or even, you know, as far as on the tabletop for this army, even try to take this army down, even try to killing some of their sturdier heroes, like this Katakros or whatever his name is. I mean, this guy's got 20 wounds. He's got four more than Nagash. So, you know, it's got to be the way the aesthetics look, the models. I don't think people really like the way the models look. I think, they're golems. What do you expect? They're Nagash's answer to Stormcast. So, I can't figure it out personally, but yeah. That's what I've got as far as comparing them to the other death units. Steve, what do you got, man? Closing thoughts on the Illshark Bone Reapers.
I think that it's just, to me, and I'm only speaking, you know, from my own point of view, to me, they're a very boring version of undead. And I have zero interest in ever playing them. But I will love the day when I get on a table with an army of them. I think they'll be a small niche group of death players that will play them.
Right.
And I think they'll be a very good army, but they're just not for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not my style.
I agree. They kind of fall into the Nurgle category with me as far as loving their lore and reading about them. Randy, what are your closing thoughts on these guys?
Yeah, I like how they basically are like the Chaos Warriors of death, and
that's
I wanted to start using Nagash like as an army, whatever. And I really didn't like the play style of like three units of, you know, 60 skeletons or whatever, and just Nagash and, you know, let spells, you know, I think like with using Nagash with the elite is going to be a fun combination. So that's the reason why I basically picked up the box set to round off a nice 2000 point army with the big guy in it.
Right. So. Yeah. And that's a great point. The box set, you know, the great price. I mean, after just kind of looking at this and kind of factoring some stuff in, the downside of this army is it's very expensive.
It comes with ogres. No, just kidding.
Yeah. And also,
which I'm using too. So yeah.
Yeah, I love my ogres. It also is expensive in actual points. I'm kind of looking at some of the point costs here, just kind of in the back of the book. I mean, it lacks much in the way of cheap units. Even the basic troops are 130 points for 10. While they tend to pay for themselves, I guess it doesn't mean that this is an extremely model light army. Or it does seem that way. I mean, while I guess some of your opponents might struggle to kill off much of the army when properly supported, it's going to be much easier to outmaneuver them, in my book, and kind of what Steve was saying too, to win by objective points. Players, I guess, to me, of the Bone Reapers are going to need to keep this in mind. Even their faster units, like it looks like these Death Riders are pretty quick, making them, expensive and even harder to waste haphazardly. I mean, you're going to want to really make sure that you know where all your units are. Some other comments I could make on them, and further compounding this problem, I guess, is that the Bone Reapers have no allies. They can't even ally with Legions of Nagash, Nighthaunts, Flesh Eater Courts. You know, I guess they figure including Nagash and Archaon in this book was enough, maybe. I don't know.
And then I'll throw in not enough chariots. You know,
you there you go. They got the catapult in there. They really didn't want you to really, you know, hang your hat on the Tomb Kings thing. So you don't even really have the option of throwing in some dire wolves or chain rasp hordes to supplement the force with something cheaper. But Bone Reapers, like Steve said earlier, they stand alone, man. And to me, I'm going to defend them here. I'm going to try to, because I think I'm afraid this army is kind of suffering unfairly to what happened with, say, Karajan Overlords early on when they first came out, or even the Everchosen. I think that the Everchosen, you know, suffered, but they needed to. And I think the early Karajan Overlords were kind of crappy, but I don't think this army is crappy. So my suggestion, you know, is to newer players out there. I mean, if you're looking to get into a new Death Army or already play Legions of Nagash, I mean, this is probably a great army for you. I mean, in particular, you know, for those Legions of Nagash players that are out there, you know, I'm sure you guys should enjoy having a new army to play, you know, as you guys wait for, you know, this army to be updated and more models to come out. I mean, a lot of people don't like the sculpts. I've been seeing that on the boards. I don't think the sculpts are any good. I wouldn't necessarily say that the models are gorgeous. I don't think that, but I don't think they're ugly by any means. I don't think they're kind of cheap looking by what I've heard, but, I would say this, I recommend the army. You know, Steve, what say you? You know, we talk about how this army would do in a GT level. Five-game GT, how would this army do?
In the hands of a competent general.
25 practice games before the tournament.
Yeah, in the hands of a competent general, they can be a 4-1 or a 5-0 army.
You think so? All right.
Oh, I absolutely do.
All right. Randy, what say you?
In the hands of me, it'd probably be a 0-5 army.
Oh, come on. Still.
No, I think that the rules are there. You got to learn to use your tools.
Yeah. So. Yep. That's
it. Is not a beginner's player army.
It is not. No.
All right. That's a perfect way to segue into the next thing. It's not a beginner's army. That's a perfect way to put that. So I'm out. Yeah. I mean, Randy, I'm right there with you, man. Wait a minute. What the hell is that? What's going on?
And now, it's time for that part of the show where we present the rules from hell.
Yes, that's right, Grimdark Goons. It's time for the rules from hell, where we present the game rules from the past or present of the Warhammer worlds that just sucked.
Here it is, gang, a Warhammer rule from hell. In the early edition of Warhammer Age of Sigmar, this rule dealt with the Bloodwrack Medusa. This was known as the Bloodwrack Stare. When making a Bloodwrack Stare attack, pick a visible unit within range and roll a dice for each model in that unit. For each roll of a 6 or more, that unit suffers a mortal wound as they foolishly meet the Medusa's deadly gaze. You can add 1 to these dice rolls if, between the time you declare the target of the attack and the time you roll the dice, your opponent looks at you directly in the eye. That's really creepy. Frankly, playing with some of these rules will be awkward enough. I'm relieved at an excuse not to meet my opponent's gaze. That's really creepy, and I'm glad it's gone. That was definitely a rule from hell.
And now you know a rule from hell.
All right, let's get back to the show. So here we go. We're coming to the, you know, we're starting to wind the show down. We're getting to the end here, and we got the question of the day. So I'm going to throw this one out to Steve. I'm throwing this out to you first, bud.
Okay.
Does a person's army choice speak to their personality?
In most cases, yes.
All right. Give me an example.
I'll give you a perfect example. I'll give you the army I play right now, the trolls. The trolls, when I look at the trolls, I think of slapstick. I think of goofiness. I think of Three Stooges. I think of humor, comedy. They're not an army that's meant to inspire fear. When people see trolls on the army, they smile. When they see that on a battlefield, they smile because they're kind of a gimmicky army. They have a comical nature to them. I think all the gloom spikes do, to tell you the truth. And I think that definitely attracted me because that's my kind of comedy. I mean, I'm definitely a Stooges fan.
Right. Yep.
So the idea of a bunch of dim-witted trolls just, you know, smashing and bashing and, as I always jokingly say, throwing rocks across the table. I mean, there's nothing that's funnier than that to me.
No.
So I definitely think that that army appealed to me because of my sense of humor. So I definitely, so I 100% agree that most people will play an army that is a reflection of their personality.
Yeah. Yeah. Randy, what are your thoughts, man? I mean, does a person's army choice speak to their personality?
Yeah. So my first army was Batonians from way back in the day. And, you know, I always liked the good guys and the stuff, but then I came across with an army that I absolutely loved. And that was the Orcs and Goblins, you know, the randomness and the goofiness of, you know, hey, you know, I'm gonna roll these dice for random movement, and if I get there, I get there. You know, it's just, you know, planning random thoughts is always fun for me or whatever, and continue on and just, you know, for those who know, like, you know, one of my favorite armies is pretty much an all squig army. You know.
Oh yeah.
So yeah. Like that definitely, you know, and that definitely, you know, reflects my personality of being laid back and letting the dice roll and see where stuff happens. You know. And then, you know, not playing like a ultra elite army, but, you know, it just, armies do reflect their owners. So,
yeah. Yeah. I would totally agree with that. I think that's, it kind of reflecting on that question here, I would say that, you know, due to my superior intelligence and my good looks and, you know, my kind standalone appearance, my strong bravado, my impetuous character, and really
but
my
Gary's
generous
not
nature
on the show anymore.
Is why I play Nobblers and why I play that whole army, because I really think that it reflects of who and what I am as really just a model citizen of the universe. Forget about the world. And I've often said it's when I become
Randy,
emperor,
the medication's wearing,
you know,
off.
It's like
something you step in.
When I become emperor and take over Games Workshop, this is going to be a great game someday. I'm really going to tell you guys that right now. And
oh man, Nobbler versus Nobbler armies.
I tell you what, that hits all the boner buttons right there, man. That's a beautiful thing, isn't it? Let's just think about that for a second. Isn't that wonderful?
The thing is, I want to prove which grot is better. So I'm going to throw out a challenge to you, Pat.
Oh,
all grot army, you know, could be 1,000 points or 2,000 points versus, you know.
Okay, you're telling me right now you want to have a challenge right now.
I got my moon clans versus your stuff that sticks to your shoe. You know,
yeah, the real
you know. Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
All right. I accept your challenge. I'll tell you what, here's the thing, Randy. At our not this war meet, but the next war meet coming up on November 30th, you bring those little bastards, we're going.
All right. It'll have to be the one after, because that one's Thanksgiving weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm talking about the 30th.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. All right. And you know what? And it's gonna be a battle report. We're getting that on film, man.
Oh yeah, I'll definitely get it on. Yeah. Oh yeah, I'll definitely record that, you know.
Randy, how awesome. Much do I have to pay to watch you kick Pat's ass?
It ain't going to happen. It's not going to happen. No. I'm telling you right now, the greatest unit, now army in the game, the Nobblers. I mean, you don't know pain, man. I'm going to tell you right now, in the words of my uncle Mo Fugga, I'm just going to say this right now. They're going to hit you so hard, man. You're going to get your money took, your brain shook, and your name in the Undertaker's book. That's what Nobblers do, baby. I'm telling you right now.
Yep.
Randy, get a dinner out of this.
Oh man.
A public service announcement brought to you by Frag Factory 3D Printing. Many of us have thousands of dollars in miniatures, yet we play on flat tables with books and overturned Tupperware to act as our fantasy and sci-fi landscapes. We've all drooled over the tables we see in magazines, lush with beautifully created terrain from all genres. The crew at Frag Factory 3D Printing want to wipe that drool from your chin and put it firmly on your friends and fellow gamers when they see your setup. Alien landscapes, desert wastelands, futuristic cities, fantasy outposts, elven forests, demonic stronghold, and so much more. Find out what you've been missing by checking us out on Facebook at Frag Factory 3D Printing, or send us an email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com. Bring your own files, or we will help you find what you've been searching for. Take your gaming to the next level with Frag Factory 3D Printing. We print life into your games. Tell them Grimdark Live sent you, and your first hour of printing is free.
Hey gang, in all seriousness, get your terrain on the table and get it with Frag Factory 3D Printing. And remember, tell them Grimdark Live sent you and they'll give you 1 hour free. You can get them via email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com or their Facebook page, Frag Factory 3D Printing.
Frag Factory 3D Printing, printing life into your games.
Now, back to the show. All right, so here we are, you know, and folks, for everyone listening, I really apologize for these guys on the show here. You know, they don't understand culture and, you know, good nature, and that's why they don't understand the beauty that I know all of you share with me with Nobblers. So we'll see you at Shantytown, man, for all the good times. So here it is, man. Closing thoughts. Steve, take it away, man. Give us some closing thoughts on today's show.
Well, you know, we talked a lot today about armies. And we talked about the kind of armies we like, the kind of armies we don't like. And you have two paths you can take in this hobby. You can, you know, join the endless stream of meta chasers, or you can actually play an army that you enjoy. I do not begrudge, nor do I have anything against the people who are meta chasers. If you are constantly looking to fill that trophy case, God bless you. Go for it. Have fun. You know, knock your socks off. But I think in the long run, you're going to find that playing an army that you love is going to be much more satisfying than playing an army that's always going to win. Because one fine day, you're going to realize that the meta chasing army that you're playing is now no longer part of the meta. And you're going to be forced to go to another army and forced to go to another army. But the guy who plays the army that he loves will always have his army. He'll always play that army and enjoy it on the battlefield, saving himself both time and money. So if I had any closing thoughts, is when a kid comes up to me in a game store and they're saying, you know, hey, what's the best army or what army should I play? I always point to the models and I say, which one of those models do you like? And they'll point to some random box and I'll say, then that's the army you should play. And that's all I have to say.
That's awesome. And you know, and I think that kind of speaks to maybe some of the things we've talked about in the past on the show, where, you know, you get that guy or you get that girl, you get whatever it is on the tabletop, and that person that plays the same army, they just keep chugging along every day, and they learn that army, they learn what it can do, what it can't do, and they get experience against a multitude of different armies. That army tends to, all of a sudden, they start winning because they start clicking with that thing. So even as an inadvertent response to that awesome advice that you would give somebody, that would be an end result. You would start winning with that army.
Yes, because when you have passion behind an army, you're going to do well with it because you care about it and you've invested time and effort into it.
Yeah, that's That's a good closing thought, man.
We've said it before. Play the army you love.
That's right. That's right. It was many times on the show. We've said that same thing. That's very, very true. So good stuff. Well, Steve and Randy, thanks for taking some time here on the show, man. I appreciate you guys as co-hosts. You know, Grimdark Live wouldn't be what it is without you. And, you know, and in many ways, we wouldn't be what we are today without Gary Frank. And I want to close the show with a very special well wishes to that great guy, and hope he's back on the show here soon, and we look forward to not only being on his show, but having him back with us. So good stuff. And that's one heck of a way to close the show, man. Another great show.
Grimdark Live, I'd like to thank you for slumming it through another show with us for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Age of Sigmar and 40K worlds. We'll be back live next Thursday, so until then, remember, roll them dice fun and fair, and don't be a frickin' short pants. And if you missed the live show, you can catch us again right here on the next Grimdark Live podcast. Never fear, gang. There'll be more great content from Grimdark Live throughout the week, with Monster Mondays, Table War Tuesdays, Warhammer Wednesdays, Grimdark Grudge Matches, and a ton more. So stay tuned and stay grim, all you dice chucking goose sniffing game of goons. You're all awesome.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue. Remember, embrace the main message here from Grimdark Live, and that's a social contract we have between gamers and the commitment we have to each other and this community. We're only as good as our last game. Check us out at GrimdarkLive.com. Don't forget to give our channel a like or subscribe if you haven't already done so. So long, Grimdark Goons. Until next time, may the dice gods bless you and your sweaty palms. Bye.